Hey, sis.
Hey, darling.
Y'all, I am so stinking excited today. But as you can tell, this is real life. She's tending my nephews. I have 47 children who are all just, real life.
One today.
Well, but all 47 of my children are shitheads.
No, that's not true. That's not true. They are my sweethearts, and they can't call them that.
Okay, I'm sorry. I apologize.
Moms don't call their kids that.
Well, that's actually what we're going to be talking about today, you guys. This, for those that don't know, this is my beautiful mother. And I am so excited to talk to you because I really don't think that we've ever had a designated time to really just talk about what you've been through and how that relates to motherhood. Mother's Day is coming up. Y'all, this woman here, so single mother for how long?
8 years.
8 years. Did you always know that you wanted to be a mom?
Always.
Really?
Always. Yep. That was my dream.
Even after having Tiffany and Tyler? I mean, you'd think that dream would just go out the window.
No, it was a great dream.
So did you ever think that you would end up a single mom?
No, of course not. Because, you know, you plan, you think you're doing everything the right way. And that was not in my plan, for sure.
But, yeah.
But it happens. To a lot of my
moms. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Two of your daughters.
I know. I'm sad.
Have been single mothers.
Yeah.
So the reason why I wanted to talk about this is as mothers, we find ourselves in situations where we do things with the sole intent of it being for our children. And as I was thinking about my last, you know, 6 months specifically, I think about all of the decisions that I've made only for my children. And it made me think about you and the sacrifices and the decisions that you made that were only for us as your kids. And that's why I want to kind of dive into that a little bit. Now, I was a punk teenager. I know that I didn't appreciate some of the decisions or the sacrifices that you made, but you have some hard-headed, stubborn children.
I do.
These are not kids that go with the flow.
But let me tell you about that. I'm actually proud of that. And see, I already feel the emotions. I'm proud of that. And I call it piss and vinegar. And I can say that because it's unfiltered, but that's about as unfiltered as I'm going to get in this podcast, so you know.
Or I'm going to pull you out.
No, no, we're not going to get all nasty, or I'll have to get out of the car.
Piss and vinegar, y'all. It's going to stay PG.
It is. I feel like you have to have that to be able to get through life, because life is tough.
Yeah.
And my mom gave me that.
Yeah.
So it's something that I'm proud of my kids for exactly who they are. Yes, I wish that they would do more of what I want them to do. You know, there's a few things I wish that they would be a more obedient, but they'll get there someday.
So tell me specifically a time that sticks out where you were like, this is piss and vinegar. This child is going to survive. Or just like, this child is hard-headed. Or think about what experience comes to mind of any of us.
Well, I could go through each one of you, you know, and say that. But you in particular?
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Melissa always thought that she was older than she really was. We just had this conversation yesterday, actually, at the dinner table. When she was 5, she told everyone she was 7. When she was 10, she told everybody she was 13. And she always thought that she was older than she was. Therefore, sometimes it got her into trouble.
Yeah.
And she wanted
because I was mature.
No. To some degree, maybe, but no. Yeah. But yet, you always wanted to do more than what you were able to do as a kid.
Yeah.
And your older siblings, Tyler in particular, was bothered some of the times when you would show up at the same party that he was to because you thought you were old enough to be there because
yes,
all your friends were his friends.
I have a memory of Tyler. We were at Laren Hank's house. And it was a party, and I was there because it was all of my friends, and Tyler got everybody to be quiet, and then said, pizza face,
no,
get out of here, pizza face out, and the whole room started to chant, pizza face out, and of course, that's me horrible. Being like an obnoxious like teenager so was like, oh, I'm just going to ignore him, and he'll move on. No. Nope, he waited until I actually left.
Oh,
so yeah, he.
I don't like that.
He was.
He wasn't allowed to treat his sisters that way. But anyway,
but it's true. I always did, and in fact, I am almost 6 years clean of lying about my age.
Really?
Yep. Because the moment I turned 29, it was like, "Y'all, I'm here. I'm here. I don't have to lie about it anymore." And now I lie because I actually don't remember my age, so it's unintentionally lying. It's but so I great. Am. Six yeah. years clean of intentionally lying about my age.
It's in the 30s that you forget how old you are.
Yeah.
I had 1 year that I literally was the same age for 2 years in a row because I forgot how old I was. And it was great. I could actually say I was like 33 or whatever twice.
Oh my gosh, that is so funny.
Yeah, 2 years in a row.
So when I was lying about my age, how did that affect you? Because, I mean, obviously, as a mother now, I'm like, okay, you want to teach your child not to lie and to be honest and to be patient. And obviously, I'm not holding any of those qualities in that moment.
Well, to some degree, it was kind of funny. And we gave you a lot of crap over it, you mm-hmm. know, as a yeah. kid. But, I don't know, you just were so, just, I'm going to do my own thing. And nothing you're going to say to me is... I'm going to listen to. And that was tough.
And has that changed at all?
No. A little bit. You've softened a little bit.
Yeah.
But
when do you think the softening happened? Was it?
Oh, geez. A year ago.
So it wasn't in my 30s because I'm well into my 30s now.
You're not well into your 30s.
I'm almost 40.
Oh my gosh, are you really?
No. No. I'm only 35.
Okay, so you're not well into your 40s. You're still in your 30s, right? And that's a good spot. That's a good age yeah. to be at.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why you're content with being that age.
It's true.
Because 35 is a good age.
Yeah.
Better than 29. People joke that they want to be 29. No.
No, I agree.
I think you're not old enough. Your brain is almost formed at 29. But
I think at 29, I still wasn't exactly sure who I was, but I also think that I struggled so heavily with friends, and so I always felt like I wasn't enough or I was too much, and I never could really figure out why I internalized it because I struggled with friends, and it wasn't until into my 30s that I realized that I'm at the wrong table if I'm not right for my friends, or I'm, you know, I'm too much or not enough, I need to go to a different table. And it wasn't until into my 30s that I had the confidence to do that. And then once I switched tables, I realized, oh my gosh, no, I don't have a hard time with friends. Oh. It was just, those were not the right friends
exactly.
for me.
Exactly.
So I agree. I think 30s is really where the magic happens. But even at 30, you're still sacrificing for your kids. So I went from being this independent, hard-headed, snot-nosed, overly confident thinking that I was mature when I really wasn't, to all of a sudden still making, thinking that I'm independent when in reality, these four little shits are controlling my life. So you couldn't control my life, but yet these four kids do.
Oh, that's a whole different animal. Yeah.
What in the world? Like, how? Why?
Well, how do we survive, Cynthia? Your role switch. See, I'm wearing my mom's shirt today. I normally don't dress in t-shirts like this.
Just I do, y'all.
For a podcast, especially. But I saw this shirt today and thought, I'm just going to wear my mom's shoes.
I'm in my mom's. That's what we're talking about. I love, you know, I did want to talk about, obviously we're talking about sacrifices and the decisions that we make. So before I jump topics, tell me some of the sacrifices or decisions that you think of when we were growing up that was difficult and that you immediately thought, okay, this is not a decision that I would be making for me, but I'm going to have to make this decision for my kids.
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is just what I had to do just to provide.
Yeah.
That was the tough part for me. And
what was that?
Providing? Mm-hmm. Well, I was, you know, I had my real estate career, which mm-hmm. was great. That saved my life, really, mm-hmm. because I was able to make my own hours, be there for all my kids, there in the morning, there at night. You know, I was always there, and I was able to make my own hours. But I also had to pick up other kinds of jobs.
Yeah.
I did inspections for a company, and that allowed me to make my own hours again. And sometimes I could take you with me and could sit in the car while I ran and did inspections.
Well, I remember we would listen to Dr. Laura.
Oh, it's true. We would.
For the love of all things holy, I never want to hear her voice again. I just found her on TikTok.
You have to pay for her these days.
She's smart.
And so I know I need to subscribe because she's.
No.
I don't feel like I need her anymore.
Yeah. Wait, you have. You're telling me that at some point you yes. have it figured out.
When you're a grandma.
Oh, gosh.
Yes, it's good.
Okay, sorry. Keep going.
So, you know, I had lots of different jobs. I taught piano. But the hardest one, I think, was to Christmas, mm-hmm. you know, and having to. And you probably remember.
Yeah.
Having to. I picked up a graveyard shift for the post office, just seasonal,
mm-hmm.
and that was tough.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
And you guys did very, very well taking care of yourselves. I'd leave in the, you know, like around supper time and get home 12 hours later and sleep for just a little bit, maybe a couple hours before I had to get you up and get you out the door. And then I'd have to start my day jobs.
Yeah. So
those were tough times for sure, but...
And that's probably something that you never thought you'd be in a position to have to do.
No, but I was glad that it was there for just a short time. You can do anything for a short time.
Yeah.
That's how
I
look at a lot of things. Things are hard. And if it's just for a month,
season.
It was a month of, it would start in November and finish before Christmas. And I would just drag, you know, I mean, I was exhausted.
Yeah.
But yet. That's what you do to put Christmas under the tree. You need to.
And, you know, from my perspective, I don't remember, like, because I think about my own single mom era of doing the graveyards, and mm-hmm. I remember being so exhausted. I don't remember you ever being short or tired or angry, but I remember Christmas. I remember that happening, despite the chaos that was happening. In our lives, I remember the stability and knowing that we were going to have Christmas.
Yeah. It was, I don't know, we just did it. And I did it 2 years, and that's all I had to do it. And I would tell all the people every year, because we kind of would all come back and do the same thing.
Yeah.
I would, and I'd see familiar faces from the year before. And I would always say, when you don't see me anymore, you know that life is good, and I no longer have to do this part of it.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Oh, man.
And the reason for that, too, is, you know, my other jobs, we traveled with baseball teams and things like that. So I had one job that just paid for, you know, away games because, you know, Tyler was involved in
accelerated
ball. And so we traveled a little bit. And, of course, Grandpa and Grandma helped. You know, they would go with us and sometimes pick up the tab for the hotel and I don't know, but somehow you just get through it a day at a time. And if I ever looked too far down the road, that was when I would panic.
Yeah.
Couldn't do that. I couldn't. And it was, that would be debilitating for me when I would think, how am I ever going to do graduation or weddings or any of those kinds of things? I just, it would scare me to death.
Yeah.
So I couldn't do that a day at a time, a week at a time. And then it was crazy. Then you'd all of a sudden look back and think, oh, we did that. it's over. We did it.
Yeah.
And anyway.
So who was your favorite child?
No, I don't have
a favorite. Stop it. Listen, this is unfiltered.
I'm not going to. I don't have a favorite child. I don't. You were all different. And you were all different in your own little sweet ways. Some were. I would think, who is my hardest child? I can say you.
What?
Yes, I can say you, honey bun.
Stop it. That doesn't even make sense.
Yeah, but it was. You were a middle child, and that's a tough place to be.
Well, if you didn't neglect me,
I didn't neglect you. You probably told all your friends that I neglected you.
I think I have it in my diary somewhere.
And I did ship you to Japan to live with your dad for a short period of time. See? I would never ship a child unless they were tough.
So
this is unfiltered. I get to say that. That was cackling.
I'm not
that
surprised.
That was tough, and I hated
it. It was
that.
Tough.
I hated it. But it was good for you to be able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
And you were running around with some kids that were not good for you.
Yeah.
And that was
And that's tough. I think I'm getting to that point in motherhood where you can't control friends. And I vividly remember there was one girl that I remember sitting on the counter, the kitchen counter with you.
I remember to this day. I can see it.
And trying to convince you that she was a good girl.
I know.
And she wasn't.
I know.
I was trying to give her the benefit of the doubt. And I knew that I was a good kid. But she wasn't going to pull me into her stuff.
But she did.
But I remember vividly trying to.
Yeah.
I remember trying to convince you.
I know. Moms have just a sixth sense.
Yeah.
Of
intuition.
An intuition. If what friends are like. I could tell by sometimes not even knowing what they were even about. And I could just feel it in my gut. And I knew this child is not good for my...
Yeah.
This friend is not good for my child.
Yeah.
But convincing you of that...
A teenager. Yeah.
And even the other kids. I mean, they had friends too that I would say, I don't feel good about them. And I was pretty much spot on.
Mm-hmm. That's terrifying.
I know. But you probably have felt that too.
Definitely. I definitely feel an intuition. And I attribute that. I'm very, very grateful. I feel like that is what helped me push Avery. It's what's helped me advocate for her. Mm-hmm. But also Kyson. Yeah. It's what's helped me understand him and be willing to get the resources, even when he says he's fine.
Yeah.
You know, it's that intuition.
Yep.
That we know better.
Yeah,
there's something there.
Yeah, so it's a real thing.
Talking about phases, right? Different seasons of life. Some are harder than others. In comparison to these hard-headed, independent teenagers, watching them be adults and struggle. How difficult is that in comparison to having them in your home versus? They're struggling on their own, and you're kind of an outsider.
It's tough. It keeps me up at night. That is why I lose sleep.
Really?
Because it always feels like there's somebody that's going through something.
Yeah.
And if it's not my kids, it's their kids. And I've decided that it never ends.
Yeah.
And then I start to panic, and I think, and pretty soon, my grandkids are going to have kids. And that's just...
And there's going to be more people.
More to worry about.
That's why you start with 12 hours of sleep so that eventually... Yeah, I know.
But that's also a blessing, you know, because we've got 17 grandchildren.
Yeah.
And that's a lot.
That is a lot.
That is a lot. And a lot to worry about, and there's always somebody that we're worrying about.
So how do you get over that? How do you not let it affect your mental health or your self-care? How do you take care of you?
I pray hard. Very hard.
Yeah.
And a lot. And I think just coming to terms, I've got good grandkids. You know, they struggle, have their things that they're experiencing just in their life, but they're also doing good things.
Yeah.
Amazing things. And I'm just proud of all of them. And it's just fun. It's a fun phase of life to be in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, now we just go to 16 ball games every week.
I know. You don't even have a choice.
No.
You couldn't have a life if you wanted to.
Yes, I could. But we choose.
You choose. That's very
true. We choose this.
That's very true.
Because we love it.
Yeah.
And it's fun because we used to do this with
your kids,
Tyler and Michael, yeah. and now it's, and grandkids just picked right up. As soon as Michael was done, Corbin was starting in it, and then Kyson was there, and then right when it was just great, you picked up and you took your little kids to Florida, so that all of a sudden, we have nobody to watch baseball.
Yeah.
Because Tiffany's kids are past that. They're grown-ups now and live an adult life, and that was tough. That was tough.
Yeah.
Because you were playing out there, and I couldn't go watch, and we watch.
Yeah, and my kids did mention a lot. Yeah. I wish Grandma was here. Mm-hmm. Who can we invite to come and watch us?
Yeah.
Since Grandma can't be here.
And we'd watch Game Changer, but it's not the same.
It's not the same, mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah.
So the sacrifices continue long after. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Because I'm in a phase where I'm telling myself this is a season. In a short amount of time, I'm going to feel like me again. And I do feel like I'm starting to feel like me again. I feel like it's been 5 years. My youngest, Lennon, she'll be six this mm-hmm. year. And I feel like in the last year and a half, I have started to kind of, and I think a lot of that has to do with I've been focusing more on my mental health. I've been focusing more on the tools on how to not suppress, which is what I've been known to do for years after my postpartum with her. But I feel like I'm finally to a point where I do have time and the ability, the knowledge to kind of take care of me. But then I listen to you and I'm like, well, shit, man, it never ends.
It doesn't end. It just doesn't. And we're all built differently, though. Don't you feel like we're all differently?
Yeah. Because, oh, for sure.
Because not everybody. I mean, I had, you know, postpartum depression for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And would be fine. And, but yet I feel like you had it differently. And as a mother, I feel guilty because I didn't even really know that that's what you were experiencing.
Yeah. Nobody did.
I mean, I remember you coming to me and telling me you just don't, do you remember before you moved to Florida?
Mm-hmm.
Standing
in my,
yeah, laundry room.
Yeah.
And you were telling me, I just don't feel fulfilled. And I'm thinking back to how it was when you were a single mother and your kids were tiny and you were working graveyards and life was so incredibly difficult.
Yeah. Yeah.
For you, especially more so than me, because you guys could take care of yourself if I had to work a graveyard shift. But you didn't have that.
Yeah.
I remember sleeping in your recliner a lot of those
mm-hmm.
graveyard shifts
yeah.
while you were gone.
Yeah.
And then Steve would have them. And anyway, those were tough years.
Yeah.
And so here you are now in a much better financial situation. And you're telling me that you don't feel fulfilled. And all I could say to you is, how can you say that?
Yeah.
Wrong thing to say.
Well, I didn't, because I think back to those times a lot as well. And it's interesting because I didn't know what I was feeling. I just knew that I felt sad. And everything just felt so heavy. Everything. Mm-hmm. And so fulfilled was kind of one way that I could explain. But I didn't know. And it's interesting because Lennon is big now. She's 5 years. And I still find myself thinking, the hell? It's not postpartum. Like my daughter's big. But it is such an obvious shift. I know that it's something that I will struggle with the rest of my life.
Goodness.
And I have learned that through therapy and through discussing it with doctors. And I think that that is really what opened my eyes. Because during that time, I did find myself thinking, what is wrong with me? I have a beautiful family, a beautiful home, a beautiful community. I was grateful that I was able to stay home with my kids, but yet what is wrong? Everything just felt heavy and I felt like I was doing everything wrong. And I had rage. Gosh. I know you remember that rage.
Yeah.
I had rage and I think back to that a lot. And I had no idea that rage was a part of depression, a specific chemical part of postpartum. I did not know that until later. And it, I remember when I finally discovered that that is a, that that's part of a chemical imbalance and it's an actual disorder, instead of feeling like ashamed or feeling like, oh my gosh, I was so relieved. In fact, I sat and sobbed just in relief, thinking, I'm not terrible. I'm not a failure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because it was, I think that that's what, during that time, that's what was so hard.
Yeah.
I felt like I had all of these things going right in my life, but yet I was failing so drastically.
And you were not failing. That's the thing. You were not, but you, fact that you perceived that is what breaks my heart, because, and I think that's why I didn't see it, because you had a beautiful home. You kept a beautiful home. Your children were always beautiful. You had, I felt like you had an amazing life.
Yeah.
And when you would come to me with emotions like that, I didn't handle it correctly because I had never experienced that.
Yeah.
Even in my lowest moments of being a single mom, you know, those first weeks of being newly on my own, I'd lay in bed and we've got to turn the car on. You have air conditioning. I'm going to.
Okay. Push the brake.
Okay.
And start it.
Thank you. Turn it up.
Turn the air conditioning up.
There. I would lay in my bed and think, I just don't even want to get up because I'm so depressed. And again, I would start thinking, how am I going to do this? How are we going to do this? How are we going to afford this? Those are the things that I experienced. But yet, I did it because all my kids were counting on me.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a choice. And that just, I feel like it saved me, you know, that thinking, that being able to put that into perspective and think, I can do this for my kids, get up out of bed and get to work.
But what's interesting is when I hear you say that, I remember thinking that as well. In fact, in my journal, because I had a plan. I knew what I believed to my core that my family deserved a better mom. And I remember, and you can even read my journal where it is all about my kids and all about Bryce, just saying that he deserves a better wife and a more patient wife. And my kids deserve someone that's loving and kind and patient. And the reason why, and I hesitate saying this because I don't want my kids to ever think that it's their fault, but just in true transparency, my plan was thinking that that's what was best for my kids. So from one perspective, in your mind, you're like, I can fight for my kids. And then in my chemically imbalanced perspective, it was, my kids deserve a better mother. So I'm not going to be able to give that to them unless I'm not here.
Oh,
and that is what fueled me feeling like I needed to get my ducks in a row. And now being on the other side of that, when I'm tired or when I've forgotten to take my medicine or like whatever it is, I do find myself thinking, my kids deserve to know that it's okay. My kids deserve to know that it's okay to fight for yourself and to be your own advocate. I have to advocate for myself in order to be a good mom.
Yeah.
And it's taken me a long time to get there. And I don't think I ever would have gotten there if I wouldn't have gone on medication. And I'm grateful. I just actually had a conversation with my doctor not very long ago, just saying, dude, it's been 5 years. Like, I don't have postpartum anymore. Like, what is this? And he explained from a chemical perspective, which I really appreciated. But he talked about how the medication I take, it's not giving me fake endorphin or dopamine. It's not telling me to be happy. What it's doing is it's allowing my receptors to open to allow that natural production of, you know, the dopamine, the happy chemicals. But instead, what my body naturally does is the receptors are closed and the medication allows the receptors to open. Something so simple that can be medically explained literally was life or death. And I think about that from, you know, on the other side now, obviously I see that it is my kids, just the hurt and the pain that would have come. But at the time, it was the opposite. I was thinking how much hurt and pain I was causing. But from your perspective, how difficult was that?
Well, from someone who has not ever experienced, I don't call it depression. I've always called it gloom and doom.
Yeah.
And we all experience gloom and doom to some degree.
Yeah.
But I don't, I've never called it depression, and I've never felt like I had depression.
Yeah.
I would feel gloomy.
Yeah.
And then I would just do those things. And you joked with Amy, joked about opening up
your
curtains.
Yes.
That's the first thing I do when it is light enough outside to open up the curtains so you're not on in a fishbowl. And it makes a difference for me.
But I remember.
But not for maybe for everybody.
In fact, I remember that very first appointment. So nobody, just backstory, nobody knew that I was to that point. I was very, very secretive. I was, because I didn't even know what to call it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know. It felt like everybody was doing great. And so I had a schedule. I would open my blinds that very first thing. I would shower. I would go to the gym religiously. Uh-huh. I never missed the gym. And it was because I would feel different. My blinds were open. My kids were ready. We were out the door. I never would allow myself to lay in bed or just like, you know, hear about people.
Yeah.
I would never allow myself to do that. But I remember sitting in the doctor's office, which I was tricked into going. I never would have gone, but I was tricked and Amy tricked me into going. And I remember sitting there and he was very calm and saying, you know, what do you do to help yourself? And I said, I religiously go to the gym. I don't miss. It doesn't matter if I have an hour of sleep. I go to the gym no matter what. I'm at the gym at 5 a.m.
to me.
But for me, it was life and death, because the difference when I would not go to the gym or I couldn't go to the gym was I had suicide ideation all day long. And every time my kids would raise their voice or start to bicker, I would instantly like just think, oh my gosh, I can't be here. I can't, it's too heavy for me. And so when I would go to the gym, I felt like I could handle it a little bit more. And I said to him, honestly, I'm okay. I feel like I'm managing. Yes, it's really hard. Yes, I will admit that life is really tough right now, but I feel like I can naturally handle it because I'm going to the gym. I'm opening the blinds. I'm making myself get outside. I have a gratitude journal. I'm doing all the right things. And my doctor said, that's great. That's beautiful. But what happens if you're unable to go to the gym? And I'm like, it's a hard day. He said, but you know, it doesn't have to be difficult, right? You don't have to suffer if you don't go to the gym. And that is when it clicked for me, because it was, yes, I could absolutely survive without chemically helping my body, but that little shift in chemical allows me to not be anxious 12 hours a day thinking,
yeah,
you know, oh, I didn't go to the gym. Oh crap, I have to go to the gym. I'm going to have all these thoughts if I don't go to the gym. Now I don't have to do that. Yes, it's still hard. Yes, I still have to work on myself. Yes, I still have to remind myself that those thoughts are not accurate, an accurate representation of my life or even how I'm truly feeling. But that little extra helped me gain that perspective. That's what I would tell myself. I opened my blinds. My mom told me, open
and
your blinds.
That's worked for me because I have a different makeup.
Yeah.
I don't know where this makeup came from.
Yeah.
Because I think really you're the only one in the family that suffers with this.
Yeah.
And I remember when you were a young girl, you went to church and they were talking about their dads.
Mm-hmm.
Your dad, the dad of the country. And so when I got home from church, you were already home. And I says, why are you home? Why did you left church?
How dare you not go serve the Lord?
And stop it. Anyway, you said, well, they were talking about dads, and I just ran out of the room because I was so upset. And do you remember what I even said to you?
No.
Well, see, I feel guilty about it now because, but that is how I, that's how I'm built.
Yeah.
I said to you, don't you ever do that again. That is ridiculous that you have to throw a fit and cause a dramatic scene in your class. You could have just sat there, let them finish the lesson, and then come home and fallen apart, and we would have all been here for you. But don't ever do that again. You just sit there and you be tough and you get through it. Because that's what I do.
Yeah. But how much do you think that it's a you thing or a generation thing?
That's a good question, because it seems to be anxiety and depression seems to be rampant.
Yeah.
Right now. And I don't know that it's just your age, but with women everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I struggle with it because I feel like just opening blinds. But yet I also know that it's more than that.
Yeah.
I have come to learn that it's more, but I don't know that I react the way I should in all those situations when I hear it, and because I've never experienced it.
I think for me, what genuinely has saved my life is when other people are willing to talk about it. I think that that's why I've become so passionate about sharing my story.
And that's important.
And yeah. And sharing some of the ugly parts of motherhood that I really struggled with. Because for a really long time, I mean, I would tease that I didn't get joy from motherhood. I got joy from drinking Pepsi. And I genuinely felt that way. Because I felt
in
like
that short-term.
Yes.
Short-term happiness.
I mean, I didn't go to cocaine. I went to Pepsi.
Good.
So I felt like it was okay.
Good. I'm happy that you just stopped at Pepsi.
But for the longest time, I felt like motherhood just, it's a mirror of all of my flaws. All of the things that I'm doing wrong 24 hours a day in my face. It's supposed, and then you get on social media and they're like, it's just beautiful. I don't want to be anywhere but with my children. And I was like, what the hell? I don't feel that way.
But why do you even feel, what makes someone feel that insecurity constantly? I mean, I feel guilt. I know that I didn't parent perfectly, obviously, because there's been so many things, you know, that you've struggled with that I wasn't aware of.
I don't think anyone parents perfectly. We're all trying to figure this out.
And I look back and I think even just those years that, you know, we were a single mom situation, life was tough.
Yeah.
Life was very, very tough.
You're surviving.
At times. I remember sitting, again, in my own church meeting, and I would look around at the girls your age and Tiffany's age and all my kids' ages, and I'd look at their families and I'd think, those kids don't have to even worry about wanting. If they want something, they're going to get it.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting there so many times just feeling such guilt, and just, I hated how I felt that I couldn't provide all the things that all their friends were able to just say, I want that, Mom. I want that beautiful prom dress, or I want that nice car, or simple things.
Yeah.
And I couldn't provide that.
Yeah.
And that just, those are the kinds of things that would debilitate me, and I wouldn't leave Relief Society or whatever, or at my meetings, because I couldn't, you know, everybody else was more wealthy than I was. But I would come home and I would just feel gloom and doom.
Yeah.
But I'd snap out of it and we did our best.
Yeah.
But I look at my kids now. They're all hard workers. They all know what they have to do to make ends meet.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, I don't know that it was such a bad thing.
Yeah.
What everybody went through.
Yeah.
It made you stronger. It made me stronger. There are so many things that we learned from that. And
yeah,
I don't think it was such a bad thing.
And I actually think about this as well, because I think that our purpose, I've thought a lot about what my purpose is, especially in the last year, because I feel like all of a sudden it kind of shifted pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And what I thought was my purpose, I had to kind of reevaluate. And I believe to my core that our purpose is to help the people that have been in the situation where we have been. And if I wouldn't have struggled with depression and mental health, how could I share that message today?
Yes,
and I have had so many people say the same thing that I had felt, of just like, I wish I could hear someone else say that motherhood isn't all that it's meant to be. And most days, the joy of my day was from when Bryce would get home and I'd say, peace the freak out. And I'd run down, get myself a Pepsi. But that was my equivalent of opening my blinds. Because it was like, I could go get a Pepsi and sit in my car and just feel like, you know what?
This is joy.
This is joy.
See, and that is so funny. I am so different than that.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. I get that that's needed for young moms.
Yeah.
I mean, I know, but I don't know.
It's interesting, though, because I don't feel that way now. First of all, I don't drink soda anymore. And I haven't for a long time.
Do you still feel joy?
Yes. Yes. Barely. Barely any. Flavored water doesn't quite give me the same joy. But I will say, going through that 5 years ago, I didn't realize how much of my motherhood I needed to heal. So I did start working because I didn't feel fulfilled.
Right.
And I felt like maybe I needed something outside of the home. Right. I needed something to focus on. And I couldn't do that with my kids. It was quite literally killing me. And so that was the only way that I knew how to communicate, is maybe I needed to do something outside of the home. And I did. And that became my sole focus. And I put every ounce of everything into that. And I worked my ass off. And I built, I participated in building these incredible companies. So much fulfillment.
You did amazing
things. So much success.
For sure.
And so much joy, what I thought was joy.
I know.
And then here I am. And I'm realizing, we moved to Utah and I'm transitioning and pivoting to do what I've been doing the last 5 years. And I realized that because I'm home now, Bryce is now to work full time. So we kind of shifted roles again, where I was more the stay at home parent in charge of schools and all of these different, responsibilities. And it was a really tough decision, or tough to accept, but I realized that I was healing a part of myself that I didn't even know needed to be healed.
Right.
Because some of the same situations that would debilitate me, I was thriving in. Yes, my kids are frustrating. Yes, they're obnoxious, and I still, at the end of the day, would like some sort of a drink, sometimes a stiff one.
No, you wouldn't.
But I'm able to handle it very different.
Yeah.
And it actually has completely shifted my direction. And I severed ties with my business partner that I was so excited and passionate about growing something with him. But I realized that something so deep and internal was being healed. And it was such a beautiful full circle moment.
I love it.
And I needed to put my energy and focus in that entirely. And that was a really hard decision.
Yeah.
It was extremely difficult and financially cost me a lot of money.
I know that.
But I am so grateful that I almost feel like I've been given a second chance. And in that same, that same sentence, I feel a lot of guilt that I didn't have that with Avery and Kyson. And when Lennon and Briggs were little,
mm-hmm.
I didn't have that understanding and knowledge to be able to nurture in a way that I always wanted to nurture. But here I am, and I'm able to. It doesn't mean it's not hard. It doesn't mean that I don't have to intentionally take a step back, learn about myself, learn about, you know, whatever the case may be.
Right.
But because I'm willing to accept that my makeup is different and I may need some, you know, something to help chemically balance, it helps me. It has helped
me
heal.
And there's no shame in that.
No, and it's taken me a long time because all I did was I just reshifted my focus so I didn't have to really, you know, put all of my focus on what I'm struggling in. And now I'm able to be a mom. And I actually find joy. I genuinely find joy from being a mom.
That's great.
And I have loved finding that.
I am proud of you. I am proud of you for coming to that.
Thank you.
And that you are experiencing it. Because my children are my greatest joys.
Yeah.
It absolutely. I can't imagine my children being
any
different.
Now I just feel bad for you because I think about me and I think that I... Your greatest joy, that's
my children are my greatest joys. It's the best thing that I ever, that I accomplished in my life.
Yeah. And that caused you to make a lot of sacrifices.
It did. Absolutely. But I don't regret any of them. Not for a minute.
Yeah.
The only thing I regret is not going to college in those years before we had kids. But I feel like, you know, you get to this age and you have a degree.
Yeah. Just, in street smart.
It's just not in street smart.
When you're blessed with four, you know, shithead children, you have
not
street smart.
They're not. They're great kids. And I was just at a conference, you know, with Tyler's company and, and the Jamie Kernlima, is that her name?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She did an exercise with us where, you know, she had all of us close our eyes and think, and music is playing, and she's saying, I want you to think of the hardest thing that you have experienced in your life.
Yeah.
And then write it down, because we all had a book we had and notes. And I wrote down being a single mom, going through a divorce. And then she says, what... out of all of the things that now you've experienced, looking back on it, what are the best things that came from it?
Yeah.
And without hesitation, I wrote, I have strong kids. I have tough kids. I have amazing kids. And I wrote several different things that came from that.
Yeah.
And that is truly what I believe. We all came through that stronger and with more resilience and than we ever would have if we hadn't experienced hard things. Same with you. You've had to come full circle with this tough time that you've gone through. And it probably will be something that you'll experience your whole life.
Mm-hmm.
But now you have the tools.
And I think when I come back to, okay, what's my purpose? I have the empathy and the understanding to help others that are struggling,
mm-hmm.
that have maybe been in my same boat, that are like, I don't know what's wrong with me.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody around me has ever struggled with this or mental health in general. And, and I genuinely am grateful that now I'm in a position to talk about it and talk about it so heavily with my kids.
That's probably why you experienced it, because this is the purpose that you are doing now in your life. Because there's a season for so many different things that we experience. And, and this is your season to do that and to give back.
Yeah.
And I love it. I think it's absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I'm so grateful. Thank you so much for being willing to come on and talk about motherhood and the sacrifices. And this is not it. This is not the end. You're going to come back on.
Oh, goodness.
And we're going to get you to be unfiltered.
No.
And, oh, yes.
No.
That's our goal.
No, don't you worry that scares a lot of people away?
Heck no.
Yes,
it brings the right people in.
No, it scares some people away.
It scares
unfiltered.
It scares the right people away.
If they would listen even just one time, they would know that it's not, you're not talking about skanky things. Right?
Wait, I don't even know what that is.
Oh, yes, you do. You're not talking about skanky things. You're just talking about things that are tough.
Things that are real.
And that
relatable.
That's
good, bad,
that's
and
a good unfiltered.
Yeah.
So
well, I love you.
I'm happy to be with you. I love you too. So
until next time, sis.
Okay. Daughter.